You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today's special guest, we have Ben Horn. Hey, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's awesome.
Hey, we're super excited to chat with you. You've been one of our requested guests, so thank
every
you for taking
time, every time we ask who should we get on, everyone's like, Ben Horn.
That's cool, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, so thank you. Before we get started, can you kind of give some of our listeners who may not know you kind of a background in yourself and how you got started in photography?
So I've been interested in photography for quite a while. I mean, ever since I was a kid, back in the days of film, which are still the days of film.
Yeah, right. Right.
But, you know, going on like camping trips and stuff like that. And I had like a little point and shoot film camera I'd use. And I have no clue where those photos are, but it'd be kind of cool to look back at them and see if there's anything there at all. But digital came out when I was back in high school. It's kind of when digital first started coming out. So didn't really shoot much film at that point, but sort of got into it with digital for a while. And then I kind of rode that initial wave where everything was kind of starting out with digital. Everything was new and exciting.
Same.
And each new camera was so much better than the last one. Uh-huh. And at a certain point, I wasn't really satisfied with what I was doing. And then a friend of mine suggested that I should look into getting a 4x5 camera, because at that point, I was kind of interested in shooting some landscape stuff. And I had never thought of it before. And leading up to that, I was helping all kinds of photographers sell their old film equipment on eBay. So I had the opportunity to work with, you know, medium format cameras, large format cameras, all kinds of stuff.
Nice.
And so I decided to get a 4x5 camera and take it on a trip alongside a really fancy digital camera. And that was kind of the last time I used a fancy digital camera. I just kind of fell in love with the process. And I've been doing that. That was in 2009 is kind of when I started shooting large format. And that's what I've been doing ever since then.
Wow.
That's so cool.
So you were saying you were helping people sell their film cameras?
Yeah. Yeah. So some local photographers here in San Diego, as digital was starting to become pretty decent, they had this old film gear that was just kind of gathering dust.
Wow.
And so at the time I had, you know, sold a bunch of stuff on eBay. So I was kind of helping them out with that. They're coming to me and I was, you know, listing it on eBay. But in the process of doing that, I had to go through all the equipment, check it all out. And I had no clue really what any of this stuff was.
Sure.
I mean, I remember just going through and, you know, just doing the best I could to see if it was working or not. But, you know, I was working with like Hasselblad cameras, some Toyo 4x5 cameras, some really fancy stuff. So it was then that, you know, when I eventually had the suggestion that I should buy a 4x5 camera, that I kind of thought back to, hey, there's that really cool Toyo 4x5 camera that I sold that one time. And I liked that camera, so I just went and bought one on eBay. So it'd be cool if it was the same camera. But yeah, so that was kind of how I got started with that and how I kind of learned it by kind of getting hands-on with all the equipment as all these photographers were dumping it and, you know, buying 8-megapixel digital cameras. So, you know.
Yeah. I was like, I sold my Mamiya 645 and I think I had at the time like a 10D that was like 6 megapixels. Mm-hmm. So what a mistake that was.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, everything was so shiny and new and fancy. Yeah. And yeah. Yeah. So, but, you know, there's obviously something to working with film that is so enjoyable. I guess for certain people, for certain professions and stuff, obviously digital is a good way to go. But a lot of photographers I know, they will shoot film for their own personal photography. They might shoot digital for the professional stuff if that's what the client needs. So that's, I think, one of the cool things about shooting film now is that the people who shoot film, they want to shoot film instead of in the past, they had to shoot film.
Yeah.
And so I think film shooters, I mean, they kind of have to know digital as well as film. So you have to be kind of pretty well rounded. And I think you kind of get the best of both worlds, which is kind of cool.
How did your whole style evolve when you were shooting digital? Was it like landscape stuff or did you kind of just like go through the racket and then kind of fall in love with the landscape stuff? It
was the landscape stuff that I was interested in. Yeah, here in San Diego along the coast, there's some pretty cool stretches of coast where, you know, things are changing from day to day as the sand kind of moves in and out, and then the, you know, the high tide, the low tide, and kind of reveals new stuff. So I'd go down there a lot, and I'd shoot a lot with the digital setup. And so I kind of knew that the landscape stuff was what I wanted to shoot, but I didn't really have the sense of discipline that I probably needed. And I think that's one of the things that really attracted me to working with, you know, the large format setup is that it just kind of, it forces you to have that sense of discipline and there's really no getting around it. You know, if you want to get that shot, you got to think ahead of the light. You really got to work for it. And I think that was one of the things that really attracted me to it.
You really do have to work for it. Like anytime I pull out the 4.5 and make some photos with it, I'm always so proud of them because it's definitely a 30-minute process at least, you know, by finding a composition and doing this and checking the light and you know, it's like you really, instead of just blasting 15 shots and then fixing the raw file in post, there's definitely
it makes you think ahead. It makes you, I think, more kind of accountable for your own choices. And when things go great, it's fantastic because you know that, I mean, if I'm standing in an area and if it's a particular scene I've wanted to photograph for a while, and if I make all the right decisions, if I have the great light, if everything works out great, I know that it's all of my decisions that kind of led to that photo. And I think I'm going to look at that photo with more respect. I'm not going to, you know, resent that photo looking back at it. If it was, you know, if it was a photo I shot 5 years ago on kind of an older digital camera, I might say, oh man, it would be better if I shot it with the latest, greatest camera. And it might make me kind of think twice about my own work and kind of doubt myself. But, you know, it's great when things turn out great, but also if things don't turn out very well when you shoot film, you learn lessons really fast.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
You try to avoid whatever it was. And so there's that aspect as well. I mean, I learn far more from when something doesn't turn out right than when something does turn right. And there's so many different ways to mess things up. So there's lots of learning, lots of forced learning for sure.
I was diving into your YouTube channel again today. And one of the things that stuck out to me now that you say that is, you know, you say like this was a learning experience or this was a good exercise. And I just thought that was so interesting because a lot of times, you know, we get bummed out and like, you know, especially if you drive into the mountains or like, or, in, you know, braving the weather and then you took 5 shots, you're not sure if they came out and you just had that perspective of like, either way, I'm going to learn something. And I just thought that was like so refreshing. And so just to take that away, to be like, you're right, I should not stop being so hard on myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm actually working on like writing an article for something. And one of the things has to do with kind of how we learn on things. And I kind of came to the conclusion that, you know, there's a photo I shot early on and it's the oldest photo in my portfolio. So it was from that first trip that I went on back in 2009. And it was kind of a rushed scene to set up. I went ahead and set up for the scene, shot the photo. Everything turned out great. And I made all the right decisions on it, which is pretty crazy given that it was like my first time using a large format camera on a trip like that. But looking back on it, I would not change any decisions. I'm really happy with how it turned out. But what was kind of strange is that the success of that photo kind of haunted me for many years because I didn't really learn anything from it. All I learned is that here's a formula that you follow if you want to turn out right.
Yeah.
But that it kind of led me to going down different paths and trying to, you know, pursue different subjects that I thought might be good, but it just, it was, you know, it lacked whatever it was that first scene had. Versus if I look at a scene where it turned out miserable and I, you know, walk away from it, maybe I don't even shoot a photo, you know, I learn something from that that I take on to the next scene. So it's definitely when things don't go right that we learn better, because from the success, we only kind of learn what worked in the past. But, you know, it's kind of strange the way that works. But I think that's something about film. It kind of forces you to learn in a different way, which is kind of cool.
I think it's so funny just hearing you say that about your first shot, because I feel like the photo gods, in quotes, I think they give us one at the beginning when we're getting into something. They're like, we're going to give him a really good one here. And then so we're just like hooked, you know, we're like, because that's how I feel like my first time going out with the 4x5 was the same. Like I nailed one of my favorite photos still to this day. And I'm just like, man, like it just keeps you going on. It keeps making you want to, you know, try different things. And it just gave me the confidence to keep going in it, because it could easily turned out terrible. And I could have been like, this is too much for me right now. I need to set this thing down.
Right.
But yeah. It's just, yeah, it's cool.
You know, something like that where you just like, you know, this isn't all that difficult. You know, what was so intimidating about this process when everything just turned out perfect, you know? But then, you know, it's going to be followed by a photo shoot where it's just absolutely horrendous. So, life has a way of teaching you lessons like that. Mm-hmm. So it's never a dull moment. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
So true.
So, Ben, what brought you to YouTube? How did that transition come about?
So that happened way back when. I mean, if you dig deep to some of the like first videos, they're bad. They're comically bad. They're filmed on like a little Elf Canon point and shoot camera. It did like 720p, so it was like not even high definition. and it was basically I was trying to do a written blog. And I just found that I was just, you know, had writer's block every single time. I couldn't, I mean, I'm going to the same places over and over again and trying to find things, but I was writing the same thing over and over again. And it just wasn't really, I just felt like I was writing the same thing. I wasn't good at it. So instead of doing that, I ended up just taking along a little point and shoot camera, recording some little video clips and putting them together. And that was back in late 2009 is when I started that.
Wow.
And no one was doing that at the time. Like the whole vlogging thing, that didn't exist. I still don't really like that word. I tried to avoid using the word vlog. So I just started calling them video journals, where I just record video so I didn't have to write about the trip. And it just kind of grew from year to year. And as the technology increased with like, you know, DSLRs doing video and everything else. And I do enjoy the process of sort of telling the story behind the trip, because I think, you know, when it comes to people looking at a photo, I think sometimes people are curious about the story of what led up to it, and the honest story, not the, you know, heroic stories that people will sometimes tell, but the honest story of like, you know, this is a photo I shot before I went home because I was having a miserable day and there was an angry cow in the canyon, which did happen this past spring. So stuff along those lines. And I just really enjoy the video aspect of it, because it makes you think a little bit differently than photography.
Yeah.
So it keeps my mind busy on the trips, which is good, because there's a lot of downtime out there. That's for sure.
Did you ever think it would be what it is today? Isn't that crazy how YouTube kind of exploded like that?
It really is crazy. And the thing with the way I do this stuff on YouTube is, it might sound strange, but like, I'm not really a huge fan of having, I find it weird that people watch the videos. If this is strange, like to me, it's just, I record little video clips, I put it out there. And in my own mind, people don't actually watch this stuff. It's just something I put out there because I approach it as,
that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. I approach it as what I call them in the videos. I call them video journals. And like, you know, if a person's writing a journal, they're not going to write it so that everyone else in the world can read it. You know, they're writing it so that they can look back at it, you know, at a later date and kind of see how they've grown. And so I don't really view them as entertainment. I kind of view them more as like a written journal. And in that sense, that's why you never really see me do like the clickbait video titles, you know, the right. five secrets yeah. you need for photography, because that stuff is really designed to attract a lot of attention and views. And I'm kind of more the type of person that kind of wants to kind of fly under the radar a little bit and just kind of do what I have to do to kind of tell the story and do that. But I don't really want to stand out from the crowd too much, because I have a feeling that that would probably have a negative impact on my own photography. And sure. I really want to keep it about the photography itself.
Yeah, that makes complete sense, because I feel like we talk about it a bunch on here. We've had a couple people that have YouTube channels and stuff, and you know, the social media game is terrible. Like, it's such a, I mean, I hate talking crap like on anything, but then, you know, I also know how it makes me feel when I'm sitting out. It was like one morning, I'm drinking my coffee with my girlfriend on the porch, and I'm like, man, I guess I really need to dedicate like an hour to Instagram every morning and an mm-hmm. hour to Instagram every night. And it's like, oh, that's awful. Like, that doesn't sound fun. You know,
yeah,
like
it becomes work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's actually one of the things with photography is I never actually set out to pursue photography as a career. Mm. I always wanted to reserve it as something I do kind of in the background on the side yes, and keep it yeah. something enjoyable. And I figured, because if I were to do it as a career, I figured I would take something I love and make it into something that I resent. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I've kind of approached social media and YouTube the way I do, where if it's not something I enjoy, I don't really want to do it. So I kind of right. keep it something I actually do enjoy doing. And that's one of the great things, though, about social media is that there are so many different kind of like little niche categories and all sorts yeah. of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, the film community is fantastic in that regard, that, you know, if you have enough people watching the stuff, you can make it into something that is a career and at the same time enjoy it. But yeah, I definitely don't like playing all the various sort of social media attention grabbing tactic game yeah. stuff. That takes the fun out of it. It's not fun anymore. Yeah. So it makes it into work.
Let's get this video to 15,000 likes and I'll take a picture of this redwood tree. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I can see you doing that.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's to me, that's just like the opposite of why I like going out to these areas. Because I go out there, I'm like, I'm the only one in some of these areas. I have it all to myself. And that's the really the enjoyable part about it all. And the social media, it's kind of comes with it. But yeah, definitely I don't think should be the focus.
I do want to tell you, Ben, your videos are so well done. I was telling Timothy before we got on, I was like, just the patience and dedication to, because you're out in the woods by yourself, but it doesn't look like it. It looks like you have a team, you know?
Yeah.
Which is like super inspiring, because I hate setting up shots by myself.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. I think some of that just comes with having done this for a while and constantly trying to sort of challenge myself to do something a little different. It kind of evolves to stuff, and you kind of figure out a formula of what works and kind of what you need in order to record enough video to make it work. But there's a lot of times when I'm out in the field and I don't feel like doing video. I mean, in reality, if anyone has tried doing video and has also tried doing large format photography, especially shooting slide film where everything has to be perfect, it's honestly too much to juggle,
right?
And so that's why for me photography is always going to be the primary thing. But the video side of things, like I'll record video after I've already taken the photo, but I'll say I haven't shot the photo yet,
that's
so
smart.
I can kind of get that clip.
It's a little cheap.
Totally, because like, you know, it's all part of the story. It's just telling the story. But I definitely don't want to be where I juggle too much. But at the same time, I like the challenge of trying something kind of new and different techniques. And I've got some fun stuff planned for Zion when I head out there next week.
Some cool
stuff. Yeah. Annual pilgrimage out there.
Man, I love that. I love that you have kind of that like yearly thing going on. Like I need to do something like that. I need to carve myself a couple weeks a mm-hmm. year to go do something like a road trip or a something, yeah. you know, something different. Cause it definitely, when you're like in the same town, like I am, I shoot the same town all the time. I just walk around and shoot the people and talk to the people. And it's like the same thing all the time. It definitely gets monotonous and you know, you get burned out doing that stuff. So,
and I think that's one of the reasons why I do hardly any local shooting, because I need to be in a certain mindset. I need to be, I think I've, what I've kind of figured out is I need to be like many, many hours away from home as far as a drive, to the point where if something's not going right, I can't just say, hey, I'm going home.
I'm going. You know,
it makes me think about it overnight. I mean, because I've done the math on times where, you know, I'll be in Zion, which is 8 hour drive away from San Diego. I'll be out there, you know, day's not going great. I don't have any good photos. I don't have a good feeling for the trip. At some point, I look down at my watch. I'm like, okay, if I leave right now, I'd get home by about 3:30 a.m. Yep. That is not a valid option. Nope. So we're going to stick it out one more day. So I think I need to force myself to kind of stay in that zone. And locally, I think I just kind of have a hard time with that, because I would be too quick to just make that drive home and get a warm dinner.
Yeah, I kind of like that idea of like, this is what we're doing. We're going far away, so we can't turn back. Like, this is the trip. This is what we're going to do.
Yep.
Just because otherwise, like you said, I'm always one who's like, oh, forget it. I'll just go home. You know?
For sure.
Yeah.
Let's back up a little bit. How did you get into the 8x10? You stopped kind of at 4x5. And then what was it, just kind of like a level up, or you saw those cameras and wanted to try that, or what brought you to the 8x10? Because that's pretty much, you know, everybody's shooting 8x10.
Yeah, I mean, and first let me say the 8x10, it's honestly ridiculous. I mean, it has its place, but people email me sometimes saying, hey, I'm shooting 4x5 now, I'm thinking about going 8x10. And my usual thing is 4x5 is plenty fine. 8x10 is honestly ridiculous. It's so much more finicky as far as setting up the focus and everything. Depth of field's a pain. The lenses are huge. The cameras are sensitive to wind. But that stuff can also be good if you really want to have those limitations that give you that sense of creativity.
Yeah.
So it's not for an image quality standpoint. I mean, some of the early shots I took on 4x5, I have had them drum scan. They print huge. They look beautiful. And if anything, you can actually see the grain on the 4x5 if you do like a really big print. On 8x10, it's still so fine you don't see it, where it doesn't look as film-like in some ways.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But
after I had the 4x5 for, I think I had it for about a year. And then after having it a year, I'm already like, all right, it's time for 8x10.
Yeah.
And I think it's just something deep down I always wanted to have. I'd seen some prints from Michael Fatali, who had taken them. He had shot them all on 8x10 slide film. And I just remember seeing those prints and going like, wow, you know, that's amazing. And I feel like I should be using the same tools that were, you know, kind of used for making those photos. And so I went in that direction and had both 4x5 and 8x10 for a while. But, you know, eventually I just sold off the 4x5 because I wasn't using it, and just kept the 8x10. But it is honestly overkill. But at the same time, when you see a transparency that's 8x10 on a light table and you kind of check it out in a loop, that's addictive. And also seeing that big ground glass, you know, it's really nice. So I see myself sticking with 8x10 for as long as I can carry it. It builds kind of a sense of consistency, which is nice. But it's the limitations. The limitations are what make it more rewarding for me to work with.
That's great. I love that. Cause I mean, same. I've been shooting 4x5 for probably 2 or 3 years, I think. And I always get caught in the loop of looking on eBay and Facebook groups and stuff. And it's like, I see the price of just film holders for 8x10. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is just out of my league. it's a wild.
Everything jumps up so much. And pretty soon I'm just carrying so much stuff on my back. And it's, you know, there are some moments where it's not fun, but, you know, it is worth it. But I don't necessarily recommend it. Yeah.
Because you fit that whole 8x10 in your backpack, right? When you're...
Yeah. Yeah. So I have two 8x10s. I have a Arca Swiss, which is a monorail camera, but it folds down to be pretty compact, actually, because the front and rear standard, they kind of compress down onto a little 6-inch rail, and then that slides off the bigger rail. So I can actually drop the camera in my pack and then just carry the rail separately. But that one's super precise. Everything's geared on it as, you know, focus, movement. So I can set that camera up in the dark, which is uncommon for an 8x10 camera, just because everything I can kind of I can just see things and work with it so well. But it's not a lightweight camera. I mean, it's lightweight for a monorail, but it's got some weight to it. I think it's like 13, 14 pounds, something like that.
Yeah, carrying that around will,
yeah. And it's that, and I usually use that camera with my heavier, faster lenses. So that ends up being a pretty big kit. But I also have Intrepid 8x10, the second generation, and that one weighs, it's like 5 pounds.
Wow.
And I use that one with lighter weight lenses. So I'll use that if I'm going on like a backpacking trip or something where I really want to, you know, save some weight, keep it all nice and compact, and I can sort of sacrifice the, you know, a little bit of speed on the lenses. So I get a little dimmer ground glass, but it's fine. It's workable. But yeah, those are the two cameras I use. They both fold down to be pretty compact. But I would carry them both around inside my actual backpacking backpack. So there's like a little padded insert. I drop it in and keep everything all clean and organized in there.
I love it. Love it. Man, I still remember, I don't know if it was last year or the year before when you were out and didn't you break like two cameras in 1 year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Over a span of like a 1 month time.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, I just remember my heart breaking, and I was like, I couldn't even imagine how you feel right now.
You know, it was kind of interesting because the first camera I destroyed, it was an Ebony camera, and beautiful camera. I mean, I love that camera. But that company, they went away. Basically the owner retired and no one else wanted to take over the company, but they made these beautiful cameras. And I bought that camera in 2009. I bought it used, but it was in like mint condition. But I used that one all the way till 2017, and it got blown over in the middle of the night by wind, but it was kind of crazy because I knew the camera was probably going to be in pieces because I leave the cameras out overnight for sunrise photos. I weighted it down with a lot of weight of rocks, you know, it was kind of funny because it was, and there's a picture of it on my website. It's on the ground. It's shattered in pieces, but it was also incredibly photogenic. I mean, there's like this crazy storm cloud in the background. And my first reaction when I saw that was like, oh, I guess I don't have to shoot any photos today, which is not like, sometimes people might be like, oh man, I can't shoot any photos today. But with large format, sometimes there's a lot of work involved and
you're like a little, you know, relieved.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. There's times when like the light doesn't work, I'm like, oh good, I'm off the hook, you know.
Yeah.
Because there's always this mad rush as far as like getting everything set and metering and everything. But yeah, so I was kind of bummed. I wanted to actually get my video slider and get like this time lapse of like the camera like busted on the ground, but I didn't have to walk back to my truck for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one was broken, but I carry a backup camera with me. And then I used that for the rest of the trip. That was fine. But then I decided to go back to Death Valley for a second round because they had some rain that was there. It flooded the salt flats a little bit. And so I set up and that camera too, the backup was destroyed. But I didn't, honestly, that the second camera, I honestly didn't really like to begin with. So it's not that I wanted it to be smashed to the ground and turned into shrapnel and salty water. But
or
that
did
being
you?
Said, I, you know, yeah, I wish I had the opportunity to sell it before I decided that I didn't want it anymore. But, you know, after that happened, then the Intrepid came out, which is a good lightweight camera. And then my Ebony camera was repaired by a very talented photographer friend of mine who also is a woodworker and a graffiti artist. His name is Mike Fink. He's really, really good photographer, but he rebuilt the camera for me and I used it for a little while after that. And it's as good as it was new, but I also felt like I should probably move on to a different camera where I can obtain spare parts for something else happens.
Yeah, smart.
So I ended up selling it to a good friend of mine, and I will be seeing that camera in Zion this fall. So it'll be a little reunion with my old camera. Yeah, so it'll be nice. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, cool.
So you're liking the Intrepid then?
Yeah. It's a pretty impressive camera. Very lightweight. I had the first generation and now the second generation, and both of those cameras I received from Intrepid in exchange for some video work that I did for them.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
But I would have bought them anyways because after my second camera was destroyed in Death Valley, and that was a lightweight one, I needed to have a lightweight camera to backpack with. But the new Intrepid especially, it's a pretty solid little camera, pretty strong setup. I'd say just keep the lenses very lightweight on it. You know, don't use any big heavy lenses. If you use a lighter weight lens, it's definitely very stable. But yeah, I've enjoyed that camera, and that's now my backup camera to my Arca Swiss, as well as my backpacking camera when I want to keep things nice and lightweight. But I just love what Intrepid's doing. I mean, awesome cameras, same, reasonable same price. Here. It's really cool stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I haven't shot 4x5 since photography school, and that was in 2004. So I am always like have my eye on the Intrepid because it's, you know, obviously more affordable. And I, you know, I like the idea of like there's customer service if something happens, you know. So that's good to know. It's good to know.
Yeah. And the thing that's kind of interesting is that, you know, I was when I went on a spring backpacking trip, there's really one photo I shot, and I shot it with the Intrepid. And when I'm under the dark cloth working with the camera, honestly, whether it's the Arca Swiss or whether it's the Intrepid, I mean, they both work generally the same way. And so you have one camera that's a very expensive camera and one that's a very inexpensive camera. They're just lightproof boxes, you know, put right. a lens on one side, film holder on the other. And I think Intrepid has a really, really nice balance for keeping the materials lightweight, but still giving all the control that we need as photographers. So I really do like their stuff.
Man, awesome. Yeah, we love them. We had them on, man, that was forever ago.
I know. Seems like... We should get them back.
Yeah, for sure.
That'd be cool. That'd be good to hear.
Yeah.
Because I don't even think they were doing the 8x10. I think they were like, sneak peek in the 8x10s when we had them on. Man, that was forever ago. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the way I would go if I were to kind of go into the 8x10 realm, which I'm sure will happen soon. I want to at least wait until I'm 40, though. I need to slow down a little bit. I feel like that's like my...
A little moderation.
Yeah. Man.
Very cool.
So there's so many questions just from like watching you for years on the YouTube. I really love that you do... You do the box set prints every what you've been doing it for a couple of years now. And
yeah, I started that in 2017, and so this will be the third year I've done a box set for the portfolio, which is kind of a cool project to work on.
Yeah, it's just different, you know, because everybody does a book, and I remember you doing books and stuff, and books are great. I'm all about printing work, like that's my if I could wear a cape and be a superhero, it'd be like the printing your work superhero, like I would go and like fly to different photographers.
Hats for Halloween
like,
costume now.
Yeah,
nice.
But it's just a different take. I like that. I like that you do that. It's cool. It made me want to like, you know, kind of do like a little box set of prints or something like that. Just something different.
Yeah, it's cool because for me, it gives me sort of a goal for the year. I mean, to come up with, you know, 10 solid portfolio shots or, you know, somewhere in that range per year. It's actually a pretty formidable task. As soon as the calendar rolls over and it's like January 1st, like the whole, like the scoreboard gets like wiped clean. And all of a sudden it's kind of like, all right, pressure's on.
Yeah. Have to start over.
And like the first winter trip I go on, so I usually go to like Death Valley or Zion or someplace kind of in January, it probably puts a little too much pressure on me because I know that like I have to like come up with this solid work. And I think as a result, my first trip of the year ends up being one of the most productive where I get like the most photos out of it, even though it may not feel like it in the moment. But yeah, I mean, I was doing the books for quite a while, and I did enjoy the process, but they're just, if you're not, unless you're making like huge, you know, numbers of books, they're just really expensive to make.
It's tough. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the company that I was using, they went away, and I tried some other ones, but just they were too expensive and the quality wasn't as what I wanted. So I just ended up saying, hey, why don't I just print higher quality prints and put them in a box and make a box set portfolio each year. And it's done really well. I mean, it's a ton of work to do throughout the year. And I bought a big old Epson wide format paper or printer that uses the roll paper and all that to help
make it a little easier to
work with. But yeah, so I mean, that's really helped out a lot, but it's a fun project, but also it definitely is a lot of work, but it's something I do enjoy putting together each year.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got to be very rewarding. I sometimes my brain works in that way. Like, I had a really great time shooting for my zine specifically. Just like when you have like a, you know, an end goal, like,
oh yeah,
you know, it fires you up almost.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, like sometimes like I'll be like looking through my film from the trip. I'm like, all right, this one right here, this one's in the box.
This one's
I know that's a solid shot. Then there's also some other photos that I might not think of much at the moment, but they kind of come around to me, you know. At the end, I'm like, I don't hate that photo. So
I love when that happens.
Yeah, that's like the little bonus surprise that happens.
It's
like, always
nice. I don't hate this one. I thought I did.
that's kind of the weird thing about, I think, with film in particular, is that, you know, you put so much effort into all the decisions that lead up to a photo, making sure everything's just right, metering, everything's good. And then I'll look at the photo and be like, I hate it.
Yeah.
Like, why did I stand there for 3 hours? Like, this is not really good. And then you give it like 6 months, it's like, this is the best photo I've ever taken.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to walk away.
It's just swinging so wildly. Yeah. At a certain point, it just kind of finds whatever, you know, wherever it's at. But that's, I think, something kind of cool about film because, you know, you don't see it right away and you have that separation from the moment that you shot it.
Yeah. I started doing that with shooting because, you know, I shoot a couple rolls a week and I would develop them like, you know, I'd shoot, finish the roll, go home an hour later and develop them and then have them. And it's,
yeah,
it was great and it's fun to do that. But man, I'll tell you, waiting a couple weeks to develop the film and to take it in. And especially when I flew out to California for the Padilla and stuff like that, like I waited on those rolls for a long time. There was even pictures of like maybe when I went home for Christmas or something like that, like on some of the rolls. And it was just like, man, like they meant so much more kind of waiting it out a little bit.
Yeah, that separation for reality. There's something about that.
Yeah, when you forget what's even on the roll.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I always appreciate your when you get your film back and you pull out the light table and you talk about them because it always cracks me up because you're like, yep, I totally missed it on this one. And then like, later on down the line, you'll be like, I ended up really liking that photo.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I didn't like it at first, but now, you know, it really grew on me.
Yeah, that's why I started doing those film reveal videos where I just film the reaction. I film those honestly more for myself. Because I look back and I'm like, why did I even like this photo to begin with? Like, I don't even know, you know, but they also end up being kind of a good learning tool for people that watch them. I mean, I mean, some of those videos, I mean, like they're like 45 minutes long. I'm like, who's actually going to sit here to watch this video of me looking at pictures? But
everyone,
like
all of us, yeah, Ben.
People like them. So it's kind of cool like that. So I always do that. The lab I get my film developed at, it's about a 45 minute drive from there to my house. So I'll pick up the film, maybe grab some lunch. Meanwhile, the film's just sitting there, just like haunting me. Just like, look at me. But you know, I'm like, no, can't do it.
You gotta wait.
Yep. So I never cheat it. I'm always looking at it for the first time on video, unless I like mess up the video settings and I have to fake it. I did that once.
Yeah. I love that. I love the behind the scenes.
That's awesome.
Cool. So do you shoot any other formats? Like, do you do any medium format or 35 or anything like that? Or is it
so
just...
I used to have a 6x17 camera, the Fuji.
Oh, rad.
Yeah. And I love that camera. Awesome camera. But I did not use it enough to justify keeping it. So I sold it. So yeah, at this point, the only thing I shoot is 8x10. I sold my 4x5, sold the 6x17. I even had a Hasselblad for a while that I was just kind of playing with, but I ended up selling that as well. And I think it just kind of keeps things a bit more simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're like a minimalist.
Yeah, minimalist with a heavy camera.
Yeah, with a big old camera.
But I do like how it has like, you know, sort of consistency through the body of work where they're all the same aspect ratio. They're all the same general quality. And there's something kind of nice about that. But it's mostly just because if there's something I'm not using, I got to sell it, move it along, give it away. I hate something sitting there not being used. So that's why I have just the 8x10.
Not us. Me and Timothy are hoarders.
I'm starting to have that feeling. Like, I'm feeling overwhelmed again with all the stuff I have. Yeah, I mean, I'm for sure guilty of, like, I mean, I had some coworkers help me move some furniture the other day. And I was like, oh, yeah, I wanted to show you guys my office quick. Come back in here. Because they know, they're just like, man, you have a new camera with you like every other day. And I'm like, here, come on in and check this out. And I was like, so this is the cameras that I use on whatever. And then I was like, I opened up my closet. I'm like, these are the big guns. These are the ones that like mean something to me.
Yeah.
And they're just like, you're crazy. Yeah. Like, who does? And I'm just like, but no, I get it. I get, and I tell this story. I don't know if I told it on the podcast, but I used to, I mean, I'm a musician and I used to play drums in bands all the time. And when I would go like 6 months or a year without playing, like I wouldn't be playing with anybody at that time. And then when I would get, you know, join a group again or just start playing again, I would be better than I was from not playing every day because of like the want and the desire. Like, you know, you do these couple trips a year and it's just like you have that hunger inside, like brewing, you know, like I can't wait to get there and take photos. Me, on the other hand, I'm like, I have to shoot at least 6 photos a day or I'm not a photographer.
Right, I
get so like so crazy about it sometimes. And
yeah, I mean, I totally get that. I mean, that's one of the things where, like, just like you said, you know, when I go on the trips, it's kind of like, I'm here, you know, I put on literally a different hat, but like I'll get there. I'm like, you know, I'm in photographer mode now. I just got to put all my emphasis on that, which I think is also one of the reasons why I like doing just the solo trips, because there's no distractions.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just get there, play a photographer. But yeah, so it's just, you know, there's something kind of nice about that.
Do you ever go on these trips without vlogging them? Do you ever just go and take pictures and not put it out for everybody?
Not really. I mean, the only time was, I mean, kind of on my spring trip when I destroyed my video camera in a kind of a forced manner. But no, I mean, it's kind of become a part of the process.
That's great.
And I think there's something about like talking through it. I think I would actually feel like I was missing something if I didn't have the video set up. I'd be like, there's something not right here.
Yeah.
So it just kind of becomes a part of the whole process. Cause I, as much as I love shooting the photos, it can be a lot of work. It can be kind of tough at times, but when I'm at home editing the videos together with a nice cup of tea, mm-hmm. you know, on kind of a nice warm day,
yeah.
I love that. That's nice.
Yeah. It's like the creative side. I get that.
Oh, totally.
I just can't imagine all the footage that you have. That's got to be so much. And like being off kind of grid with that you're just like rolling around with all these like hard drives and SD cards. And man, I would be so overwhelmed.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you got to have ways to make sure, you know, keep all the batteries charged,
for sure,
keep everything going.
Yeah.
The storage actually isn't that bad. I usually maybe about 64 gigs a day, which sounds like a lot, but it's not too bad because it's in 4K. But I just have a ton of SD cards, just have a way to charge up batteries and all that. But definitely got to stay on top of that because otherwise, there's actually when I first started doing this way back when with the little Canon Elf camera, like I had no way to charge the battery. I went on the trip with like one or two batteries and that was it. And I remember there was one hike I went on where like my battery's almost dead. I think this is about. And that was it.
Yeah. Oh, no.
End of the trip. Yeah. Roll credits.
I've learned a lot, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because Timothy and I, we dabble in YouTube. And I definitely know that trying to separate or not separating, or should I shoot this as a YouTube or not? But I've definitely like gone on trips and been like, I should be vlogging. This is good content. What am I doing? But then it's also like that I'm not shooting as much. I don't know. It's like a tricky. I think your setup the way you do it is more conducive to both.
Yeah, and I think that's also one of the reasons why I burn out pretty fast too. Because I mean, I've got friends that'll go on trips; they'll be gone for like 3 weeks out in the field on a shooting trip. I'm like, I honestly have no clue how you do that.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm like burnt out after 5 days. I mean, I have when I head to Zion next week, I have 2 weeks of campground reservations. I can guarantee you 100% time, I will not be there for the full 2 weeks. I'll be there for like 5-6 days, and then I'll just be like limping around like, this is horrible, you know. And then I'll be back home. I'm like, why did I leave? That was so good.
It's hard.
It is. It really is a lot of work, but it's worth it. It's definitely worth it.
You should do like the first trip, the first leg of the trip vlog and do all that. And then the second half, just like relax and like
go camping.
What I've learned is that after about, and this is something of what I've learned from just going on runs in the morning, like I can run about 5 days in a row. And then after that, I'm dead for 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just absolutely miserable for 2 days. And I think that's kind of what happens on the trips because I'm just active for so long that after 5 days, my body's like, we're going to shut down here.
Yeah.
So
you got to lay down.
And I really
for a
should
second.
Just relax, you know, just take a day off, lay in a hammock, read a book, and I'm sure I'd be good for another 5 or 6 days or something like that. So I really should do that.
Yeah. We'll be right back with a question for Ben right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code AnalogTalk10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from FG.analog. And he asks, I've noticed you haven't done much, if any, black and white landscape work. Do you have any plans to or no?
So I've been threatening to do black and white for a long time.
Threatening. I like that. Yeah, me too.
And I've tried it, but I've also realized that I am horrible at it.
Oh, interesting.
I need to work on my developing. I tried some tray developing, but my technique was horrible 3 different times. It's something I do want to get into, but I really do need to get the fundamentals down as far as developing it to make sure that I can actually trust the photos I shoot. Mm-hmm. So I do hope to do. There's definitely a much bigger skill set required for shooting black and white than for color. So someday perhaps I'd love to get into doing like platinum prints and stuff like
Ooh,
that.
Yeah. Oh,
that would be great.
Yeah. But until then I'll stick to my comfort zone of shooting color. Cause it's just, I see in color so much better than in black and white.
I get that.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So the next question, Ben, comes from another Ben, ben.brogh, B-R-O-U-G-H. He says, when/how did you decide to make the jump into full-time/professional photography?
So I'm actually not full-time yet. I work 2 days a week actually at a camera store. So I graduated college in 2004. And ever since then, I've worked at Nelson Photo in San Diego.
Nice.
Yeah. So I've been working there. I was full-time for a long time, but year by year, I've been kind of scaling off the day. So I'm down to 2 days a week now. And I am at the point where I could do photography full-time. But we'll see, because it's nice to have kind of the balance of, you know, being able to pay the bills, but sure. also being able to do what you like. So 2 days a week has actually been pretty good, but definitely is my goal to pursue it full time. So that's sort of the motto I've been kind of going with is, you know, I'd rather sort of make minimum wage doing what I love, you know,
right.
landscape photography, than pursue some sort of like crazy lucrative career where you make a ton of money, but mm-hmm. don't really enjoy what you're doing. So I definitely hope to be there within a year or so for full time.
Man, that's great. And you do all your YouTube videos like ad free and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I turn off the ads because I just don't really like the influence of what the ads
right.
do. It kind of makes you kind of conform to the popular recipe of, you know, the clickbait stuff, the tips and tricks and all that kind of stuff. And to me, that makes it feel like work. I'd rather kind of go sort of the path less traveled and kind of see where that ends up. And it's been, I think, a much more rewarding process than just trying to go after all the views and right. all the stuff that comes with that. Because kind of like I said earlier, I'd rather just be kind of flying under the radar a little bit, doing what I love to do and not really make it into work. So for me, that's kind of perfection right there.
Yeah. It must be fun working in the camera shop.
Yeah. I mean, so many different, you get access to all kinds of interesting things and meet all the reps and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely pretty good. And actually that's how I, was initially, selling the cameras on eBay for a lot of the local photographers. Cause they'd come into the shop with their cameras and like, hey, we need to sell this. And then they'd say, hey, talk to Ben, he'll eBay them for you. So, you know, good connections and stuff like that as well.
That's awesome.
I feel like a lot of people forget that by you turning your ads off on your YouTube channel, I don't think there's any monetization then through like YouTube itself, right? Like, I don't think there's any.
I get next to nothing. I have some older videos that I haven't turned the ads off. Just because it takes a lot of work to go all the way back through them all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
But by and large, it makes maybe a dollar or two a month. So, I mean,
it's every two,
barely, yeah. barely. Yeah. So I depend completely on the people that, you know, send voluntary contributions and stuff. And I think I just end up with a much sort of higher quality audience of people that are more into it. And they're kind of more right. behind the whole story of it, as opposed to just, you know, looking to, I don't know. It's a different sort of vibe, different sort of audience.
Yeah.
And I definitely do appreciate that.
Yeah. See, I find that really cool because along with, you know, just like everything you just said, that you get, you know, the trolls, the this, yeah. the that. People, yeah. you know, people always think like that if you're doing YouTube and you're successful at YouTube, that it is, you know, it's a crime. You know, I see people right. tear all kinds of YouTube channels that I've watched, you know, throughout the years of just being like, oh man, you did an ad for this. And it's just like, but it's like, man, you know how much knowledge, like how much stuff that you've given for free, you know what I mean?
Oh,
just
yeah.
to the community. Yeah, yeah.
It always just kind of bums me out when people get all kind of crazy about that stuff.
And it's nice because I avoid pretty much all that stuff. The downside is a channel is extremely slow to grow. I mean, it grows at a snail's pace, but that I secretly kind of like that because, again, I don't want to have like this huge channel and all the stuff that kind of comes with it. So,
right.
so it's kind of a win-win kind of a thing for the way I do things.
Doing it for all the right reasons.
Nice.
It's just cool that you have a community around you that, you know, kind of helps you grow and
right.
you know, you have people that contribute. Like, I mean, we feel the same with like our Patreons and stuff mm-hmm. like that. It's just, it's pretty cool to be in a realm where you can make stuff and people appreciate it, you know.
Yes. Oh, for sure. It's cool. Yeah, it's incredibly rewarding to know that, you know, all the work that we kind of put into this sort of stuff, that, you know, there's people that appreciate, that enjoy it, that look forward to it. And it is kind of a testament to what's possible these days on the positive side with all the social media stuff and being able to put stuff out there. But I think it's definitely, it can be very rewarding, but, definitely also, you know, it's a lot of work, you know, this stuff isn't free.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah. Well, come on. You mean Fuji's not sending you boxes of film for free?
They have not yet. No,
yeah.
Not yet.
Fuji, get on it.
So yeah, we break off and we ask our guest kind of the two camera questions, which I'm kind of interested to know what we call it, the desert island camera. Is there a camera that you would take with you? You can only choose one of your cameras for the rest of your life. On this desert island, there is like a film lab and all that stuff, an unlimited amount of film. But what camera would you take with you?
I would take my Arca Swiss 8x10. It's just kind of what I know. It's a good all around camera.
Just so long as
I can you know, have the film, get it processed and everything. There's something kind of nice about it. And so, yeah, I'd just take my main camera and let that be the one.
Good answer. But okay. Yeah. So the part two, I'm very curious to know, since you don't shoot any other formats or, you know, really much anything but the 8x10, we have the white whale camera. Is there a camera that you've kind of lusted after for a while that you don't have, that you want, that you've always wanted, kind of like, we call it the white whale. Is there one of those out there?
Honestly, there isn't. I mean, it might sound strange, but I think that's one of the reasons why I do enjoy working with film, because, I mean, the Arca Swiss I'm using right now, I honestly could see myself using that camera for the rest of my life. I would have said the same thing about the Ebony, but it got destroyed. But yeah, I mean, just there really isn't any other camera out there that I'm just wishing I had or could work with. I'm just super, super happy with the Arca Swiss. So it's kind of nice to have that, you know. It's like, if you have like the dream car, but it's like the car you're already driving.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's satisfying. And I think that's something that kind of comes with film, which is kind of cool.
I'm always jealous of the guests who are like, no, I'm good. I'm like, what's...
Yeah. It's nice. I gotta say, it is nice. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's really something about that, though. Like, I kind of long for that in a way. Mm-hmm. Like I've said, that it's just that the collection's getting out of control. And just when I think that I have everything I need, something else, like something ridiculous, like the last camera I got was just like, it was like almost a gift. You know what I mean? Like, it was that cheap and affordable to pick up a camera that I've wanted for a while, that I had before, that I needed back. And it's just like, do I even need it? You know, I have cameras that are way better than that one, but I needed it. You know, it's just, it's such a, it's an endless game of, I mean, I guess that's, you know, why I'm hosting a podcast about film photography, because I have issues.
Yeah, we have an addiction. Yeah. That's why I don't sell anything anymore, because I just always want
it
back.
I'm like,
done. Yeah, I mean, that is one of the nice things about, I think, just by sticking with just the 8x10, is that I don't want another camera to store and haul around. Mm-hmm. I'm good. I'm good with the one that does the job. And so I'm super happy with it. So yeah, that's, I think, the one thing that kind of comes with the territory, which is kind of cool.
Man, great.
This has been awesome. Ben, thank you so much for joining us. We're so glad we finally got you on.
Awesome. It's been fun. I really appreciate it.
So where can everybody check you out online?
So on the Instagram, I feel like I have to say the Instagram, Ben Horn Photo on there, Twitter, Ben Horn, and on YouTube, just search for me, Ben Horn. You'll find me on there.
Cool. And Timothy, what about you?
Guys, I'm on Instagram at Timothy Makeups. I also make film photography related YouTube videos. Just go to the search bar. It's the easiest way to find it. Type in my name or type in Timothy.makeups. Either or, both work. And yeah, I have some stuff there, some older stuff. I have something that's kind of on the camera that I need to get off the camera and get off my butt and work on it, and that'll be up. And yeah, that's where I'm at. Chris, where are you?
So I am Chris B. Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter and Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. And we have a Facebook page and a group you can join. Oh, also, we have an announcement. We have to announce our print exchange.
Yeah,
so,
I'm
guys,
excited.
We're doing our second annual 4x6 print exchange. So last year we had so many of you guys sign up. I think it was like over 100 people in like 27 different countries. We want to do that again for the holidays. This time we're going through Elfster, so everybody's going to get matched through that website. The link is right now in our Instagram bio. And of course, I'm going to be pushing it out everywhere until the deadline, which is November 30th. So yeah, hope you guys can sign up again because that was super fun. Yeah. All right, Ben, thank you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been a blast.
Awesome.
Bye, guys.
See you the next one. First off, we want to thank Ben for being on the show. You are one of the most listener-requested guests we've had so far, so we had so much fun talking with you, picking your brain about YouTube, large format, you know, landscape photography, all that fun stuff. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Ben. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. We have a bunch of tiers over there. We have like a little early bird special. On Tuesdays, we release the show a day early. So there's that. There's a bunch of other tiers. Check it out. If it's something that you're interested in, sign up. Every little bit helps. And thanks to all the Patreons that already support the show. So guys, until next week, we'll see you soon. Later.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.